Welcome to the big show.
He could go all the way
to the North Valley's own Jerry O'Lennon.
When you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Is there a heaven? Oh, yeah. It's the place dreams come true.
On KKXX Life Radio, this is Live Local Talk.
Good morning, everybody. One of my favorite days of the week, Wednesday. We talk serious stuff, I think. We talk to Gidi Hansen of The Growing Place to talk about issues that we all confront in life and the way to improve ourselves. It's sort of like, and if I'm wrong, I know she'll correct me, kind of like Cognitive Behavioral Therapy 101, where we all could kind of learn something about ourselves and our friends and our loved ones and how to have better relationships. And what we were talking about now are ants. Not like, you know, Aunt Anne or Aunt Mary, but Aunt, A-N-T, automatic negative thoughts. And it was brought out by, was he a psychotherapist, Aaron Beck?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
See you.
Hi.
Yeah, he was a psychiatrist. He was an MD who did Freudian psychoanalysis. And he was working with his patients and finding out they're not getting better. And then he postulated that we all have automatic negative thoughts. Actually, he called them automatic thoughts. The negative was added later because in his view, all the automatic thoughts were negative.
Really? So, and I think just to recap briefly, we all do this.
Everybody has them.
Okay. So let's run through the main, we were talking about identifying the ants, challenging the truth, and then recasting into a positive and realistic thoughts.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've gone through four different types of automatic negative thoughts, and if you want to sum up for
us. Sure. Beck talked about all automatic thoughts are either about the self, about others, or the world, or about the future. And we go about that through overgeneralization, through filtering, all-or-nothing thinking, or personalizing. Overgeneralization is thinking of myself, the world, or the future in terms of always, never, and, you know, a generalization has an exception.
I didn't get a raise. I never get a raise.
Yeah, I'll never get a raise in this place.
Okay.
And then filtering is when we concentrate on the negatives and we filter out the positives.
I got a performance review. It was my boss said some negative things about me, but don't look at the positive things as well.
Exactly. 90% of what he said was positive, but I'm going to focus on the negative.
Okay.
And then all or nothing thinking is thinking in black and white terms. So if I can't do it perfectly, I might as well not do it at all.
Oh, yeah.
Would be a perfectionism is an example of all or nothing thinking. And then personalizing is taking responsibility for something that is not my fault. I say hello to somebody, he doesn't answer my hello, oh, he must be angry at me.
I must have done something to get him upset.
Exactly.
Okay. And that's where we left off.
Yes. And so now we're going to talk about, well, we talked a little bit last week about catastrophizing. And catastrophizing is overestimating the chances of something desperately going wrong, like a disaster. It's expecting something unbearable and intolerable to happen. An example would be, statistically, it's known that almost all car accidents take place within 25 miles of home. So catastrophizing would be if every time I got in my car, I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to be in an accident and die. Or every time my husband drove off, if I were to say, oh my goodness, he'll get in an accident and total the car. So that would be catastrophizing. And so what we want to do with that is we want to identify whatever the ant is. So can you give me an example of catastrophizing maybe that you've seen in yourself or others?
Oh, I have seen it myself where it's a fear. I have a fear of flying. I don't like to fly.
Oh, that's a great example.
I don't like to go over bridges. I say something on the news where a bridge breaks and people drowned, and I think that's got to be the worst way to die. And I have a real phobia about crossing bridges.
Okay.
And it really makes me nervous to cross bridges.
Wow.
So much so that Kelly will drive when we go across a bridge because I get tense and I get nervous.
And I can see how being in the profession you're in, you mm-hmm. cover bad news all the time.
Every day.
I can see how that would affect your thinking. Mm-hmm. That's actually normal in a way
yeah.
that it's affecting your thinking.
Uh-huh.
So how would you challenge that?
I'd try to be realistic and try
yes.
to say, look at all the cars that go across this bridge and everything is fine. And you could look up on the internet and say, how many cars cross the Golden Gate Bridge in one day? And you'd say,
perfect.
Well, probably. I think I read that like it's 80,000 over the course of a weekend. Well, over the course of 52 weekends, that's probably 40 million people that go across and nothing ever happens every year. So
that's a great challenge.
That would be a great way to challenge
it. So how would you recast the thought that if I go across this bridge, it'll collapse and I'll drown in the bay?
I'm not sure.
Well, think about it. Think about how you just challenged it.
Mm-hmm.
You might say something like, although there is a possibility mm-hmm. that this bridge could collapse, it hasn't happened in a long, long time.
In fact, never.
And the earthquake during the World Series.
Yeah, that was the Bay Bridge.
The Bay Bridge.
Yes.
So it hasn't, it's very, very, very unlikely that it'll happen, uh-huh. although it is possible.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. I do lots of riskier behavior, like get in my car within 25 miles of home.
Right.
So mm-hmm. driving across the bridge may not be actually as dangerous as driving to the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's a recast.
There you go. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good. But I'm still going to be tense when I go across the
that's
bridge.
That's okay. That you could be tense as you want, and thank goodness for Kelly who can drive.
You can drive with no fear.
I'll tell you, never go to the Chesapeake Bay and take that bridge.
Yeah.
That's like mountain climbing.
Really?
It's like a roller coaster ride. It goes up high beyond where you can see before it starts descending. And the bay is really, really far below you. I got the shivers just looking at that bridge.
That's part of it, too. Sometimes you look at something, and I'm wondering if that's one of the categories, just looking at something and getting frightened. We're going to take a break. We're talking to Agiti Hansen of The Growing Place. And if you yourself are looking for if you have some issues you want to have help resolved, I suggest you give her a call at The Growing Place. We're located on East Avenue. And her phone number is 588-0448. 588-0448. We'll continue talking about automatic negative thoughts that we all have.
This is Live Local Talk.
All right, welcome back to the show. Agiti Hansen of The Growing Place joins us on every Wednesday to talk about what I like to call Cognitive Behavioral Therapy 101, where we could all learn a little something about ourselves and our loved ones to help have better relationships. And I find just talking to her myself on our show, I learn quite a bit, and I take a lot of these things home and try to help in my relationships. And I always suggest, if you do want to have a talk, it's a very progressive way of handling, and less expensive, to be honest with you, by going to The Growing Place, about talking about matters. It doesn't have to be, you know, anything that, you know, it could be all kinds of issues. It could be substance abuse issues. It can be addictive behaviors. It could be anything that you might need some help and some advice on. I would suggest contacting Agiti at The Growing Place. Agiti Hansen, her number is 588-0448. Today and the next Wednesday as well, we'll be continuing and finishing up on our discussion on automatic negative thoughts. And we left off talking about catastrophic thinking, where we think about just absolutely the very worst thing that could possibly happen.
Well, our next category is called emotional reasoning.
Okay.
And that's mistaking a feeling for a fact.
Okay.
So let me talk for a moment about the differences between feelings and facts. Both of them provide us with valuable information.
Uh-huh.
So I am not saying suppress or repress or stuff your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, become an automaton.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying let your feelings be the runaway horse that you ride all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But what I am saying is let's listen to both facts and feelings and make a wise decision.
Okay.
So let me give you an example of facts and feelings. And I think I used this on the show before. The guy who made a 99% on the math test
mm-hmm.
is kicking himself for missing that one question.
Mm-hmm.
And if his friend were to ask him, you know, hey, Charlie, how'd you do on your test? His feeling is, I did terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I really messed it up. And And the friend is concerned and says, why? What happened? What score did you get? Mm-hmm. He said, oh, I got a 99, but I should have gotten 100.
Yeah.
So he is confusing facts and feelings. The fact is he made a very high A, but the feeling is he feels like a failure.
And when people say things like that too, you don't take people like that seriously. You kind of like, oh, brother, this person thinks he's so smart and so gifted, and if he got 99 out of 100 and he's upset, it almost sheds a bad light on him or her who comes across like a perfectionist, which can be kind of a turnoff in some ways.
It can. Until I remember, I have my personal areas where I'm very sensitive if I don't do well. For instance, let's say in my marriage relationship, I can look with hypercritical eyes at my spouse and expect perfection of him and myself. Maybe I don't on a test, but I have an expectation of perfection, say, on the job. My boss should always be good to me and always 100% day and night appreciate me. I am setting myself up for failure with these kind of feelings because they're unrealistic.
Because you carry your idea of being perfect, and you expect yourself to be perfect, you're going to expect your spouse or your other people
possibly
in your lives to be perfect.
And there are people who don't expect themselves to be perfect, but they expect everyone else to be.
Oh, okay.
They're very generous with themselves, and they overlook their own mistakes.
I see.
But they cast a very critical eye on everyone else. So it doesn't have to be the test, you know, where there's emotional reasoning.
When you told me that last week, I think it was, or the week before, it happened in my life, and very briefly, because I don't want to get lose train of thought, but my son came home, and he was very proud. He had an 87% out of 100. And he was very proud. And I was thinking, oh, I'd like to get 95 out of 100. But I said, you know what? He's very proud. He got 87. I said, way to go. Way to go. And I didn't say anything else like, well, maybe next time. I let it sit as it was. And I thought, well, you know, next time I wanted to say, but 87, you could have done better. But I resisted it primarily because of the conversation we had.
Yeah, that's wise. And usually people will grow more with encouragement than discouragement.
Right. Right. So I think I just said, way to go. Keep going. You'll keep moving higher and higher. Way to go.
Yeah.
And I think that was the way to do it. So I'm really glad that I didn't dampen his spirit by saying, well, 87 was not, 95 or 98 or 99.
Right.
But I hope I did right there. Anyway, let's continue. We had,
So emotional reasoning is something we all do. Uh-huh. In some areas it's, it can be beneficial, but in other areas it can really warp how we see reality. Like one emotional reasoning might be, the world should be nice to me.
Mm-hmm.
We may not admit to ourselves that we have that kind of reasoning going on until the world is not nice.
Mm-hmm.
So why do we get so upset when the world is not nice?
Mm-hmm.
Because we have this underlying assumption and expectation that the world should be nice to me. And that can be part of our emotional reasoning.
Is that kind of somebody will say, or my sons will say, well, that's not fair. And you have to say, but life isn't fair always.
Yes, that's a good example of emotional reasoning, is expecting that life should be fair.
Uh-huh.
And it's not.
Right.
And yet you don't want to, create pessimism in your children.
Right.
You want them to be realistic with faith, hope, and love for God.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we have to walk a fine line. But I don't want you or our listeners to think that feelings are bad or wrong. We just have to put them in proportion.
Okay, I'm talking to Dee Dee Hansen of The Growing Place. We're going to wrap up our discussion for today. And we're also going to be talking about automatic negative thoughts next Wednesday on this special series on automatic negative thoughts, finding them and trying to cope with them to make those negative thoughts more realistic thoughts. We'll be right back and wrap up today's show after the short time.
Welcome to the North Valley's own Jerry O'Lennon.
Ask yourself, what kind of example are you setting for others?
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
On KKXX Life Radio, this is Live Local Talk.
Gidi Hansen, an expert in marriage and family therapy. She's a registered intern working to attain her license in marriage and family therapy. She handles clients. She's over at East Avenue, at The Growing Place, and her number is 588-0448. Wrapping up today's discussion on automatic negative thoughts, and let's very quickly recap, if you haven't been listening, the different types. There's overgeneralization, all-or-nothing thinking, filtering or selective abstraction, just picking out the negative aspects of a situation and not focusing on any of the positive. All or nothing thinking, being a perfectionist, so to speak. Well, I got 90. I didn't get all the answers right, so therefore everything is bad. Personalizing something that might not necessarily something bad that happened, when in you're taking all of the blame for it when you have nothing to do with it. Catastrophic thinking, overestimating the dangers of something that could happen. Emotional reasoning, and this is kind of where we left off.
Yes, it is. And if I may just say something about The Growing Place. I am an intern, so I can't call myself an expert.
Okay.
Thank you for the compliment,
okay,
though. You're very sweet. And also, we have actually experts at the center, mm-hmm, who are licensed, and a lot of interns and life coaches and lots of people there to help,
right,
the listeners.
Right. There are
me.
Others. So, you know, so if Gidi's busy and there's other people you want to have, you want to talk to, sure, there's plenty of experts.
There really are. Okay. And so I wanted to ask you, Jerry, can you identify emotional reasoning in your life? Or give me an example of it in someone else's life.
Okay. No, I would share. I'm trying to think of it. Will you let emotions dictate your decisions when would be better off looking at facts?
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it.
I would probably say that in my job, I see that a lot, mm-hmm, where I see somebody will come in and say, well, I have a story for you because this is what happened. So then you go there, and then a woman was going to be evicted from her place. And you go there and you listen to her and you think, oh gosh, I feel so bad for her. She's struggling. She has cancer. She can't pay this. And then you feel for her, and I feel badly for her, so I want to do a story to help her. But then you have to get the other side of the story, and then you hear the facts of what happened, and you go, oh, I see why the landlord is evicting this person, because there's this, 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 and this, and this. So you have to take the facts and counterbalance them with the emotions, and sometimes the facts overrule the emotions.
It sounds like you did the challenge and the recast all together.
Right.
That's a yeah. good summary of that.
So to be honest with you, as far as that day's output of news coverage, that story was a wash because the story never happened, because there was no story.
Right.
Because the facts overruled the emotion,
right,
and there was no point in doing the story.
Okay. That's a yeah. great example. Hmm. Well, with your permission, we'll go on to the next category.
You're in charge.
Okay. It's called mind reading.
Okay.
And that's it's assuming that we know what other people are thinking.
Ah.
And, of course, this is something we all do.
I see.
We assume that we know what other people are thinking, what they're feeling, and what they're doing without checking the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So an example might be, let's say, you know, a very insecure and jealous wife sees her husband talking with a female at a party,
mm-hmm,
and then says to herself, oh, he thinks she's prettier than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's more interested in other women than me,
mm-hmm,
or, you know, nobody here is talking to me, so nobody here must like me.
That also comes across, that's also sort of the catastrophic thinking, too. You're thinking of the very worst.
It can. Uh-huh. These things can overlap, mm-hmm, but in this category, we're just focusing on, I think I know what you're thinking, feeling, mm-hmm, or why you're doing what you're doing. I think I know your motives. And it leads me to a negative conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be totally wrong. Let's say after the party on the drive home, the wife asked the husband, so what did you think of so-and-so? You know, I saw you talking with her.
Mm-hmm.
And he might say, oh, she is so self-centered.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't get a word in edgewise.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to avoid her in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and you're thinking to yourself, wow, and I went through the divorce and it was finalized, you know.
He's leaving me for this woman. Yes.
Yeah, you know, and nothing like that was happening, mm-hmm, at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be mind reading. So if we encounter this, the best way to deal with an ant is first you have to identify it,
mm-hmm,
then you challenge it, and then you recast it. So how might, I've identified the ant after, mm-hmm, it was all over. How might I challenge the ant? I could say things like, well, we're at a party and we are supposed to socialize. And I've talked with a lot of guys and I'm not interested in having, mm-hmm, a relationship outside my marriage with any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it would actually be antisocial for me not to talk with anybody. And
right.
So my husband's a sociable guy, and it's good that he's talking with people.
Mm-hmm.
Could be the challenge. And then the recast could be, I'm glad I'm married to a man who is sociable and that people like to be around.
Right. You should be proud of that fact.
Yeah. And it's a total recast of this original idea
mm-hmm.
that somehow it's a reflection on me because I'm reading his mind and I'm reading his motives and it makes me look bad.
It all comes back to the automatic negative thoughts, the assumption, let's think the worst thing possible. As opposed to what's realistic.
Or some kind of negative thing.
Not necessarily the worst thing, but something negative.
Something negative that then causes me to become anxious, causes me to become depressed, causes me to become suspicious,
mm-hmm.
causes me to withdraw trust,
mm-hmm.
and just makes the world a dangerous place for me.
I see. Okay.
So that would be it.
Okay.
So mind reading is something we do, and we don't usually call it mind reading. We usually call it knowledge. I know what you are thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I sit with clients sometimes, they'll say, you're probably going to laugh at this, or you probably think I'm really stupid, or, you know, you probably think, when am I ever going to learn? And I'm not even thinking anywhere near those things because I don't think those things about my clients ever.
And I think it's important to sporadically remind people during the course of these conversations is that these are types of behaviors that everybody feels at some time or another. I mean,
yes.
I think everybody, I should hate to admit this because I identify with every one of these things.
Me too.
Sometimes to a lesser degree for some than others,
yeah.
but I'm guilty of all of these things.
Yeah, me too. And the beauty of ants is you get the prize if you can identify it.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can't work with a person who says they have no ants.
Mm-hmm.
Those ants are going to go running wild in their lives and in their mind because they haven't learned to identify them yet.
Mm-hmm.
So identifying an ant is one third of the battle, and you can be congratulated for that.
Dede Hansen at The Growing Place. We're going to continue our discussion on automatic negative thoughts next Wednesday. Dede, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Next Wednesday, join us. We're going to continue discussing automatic negative thoughts, how to prevent them, and make your life a little more peaceful, and make your life at home more peaceful with your loved ones. Again, if you want to contact her or another individual at The Growing Place to get some counseling sessions, give her a call, 588-0448. Good morning, everybody.